Angus should have been back by now.
Zach Jardine tossed back a glass of whiskey.
Something happened out there.
Dave Snyder, Joe Hutto, and Doyle Hilliard were sitting at the table with Jardine. Hilliard, who was Braverman's best friend, leaned forward with a worried frown on his face.
You want me to take a ride out to that mesa, Zach? I can find out what's going on.
Nah, the cattle don't matter that much. We're going to get those rifles in the hands of the Navajo tonight, and by this time tomorrow, the war will be started and nothing can stop it.
Hilliard, Snyder, and Hutto looked surprised. This was the first they had heard about delivering the rifles to the Indians tonight. They had to be wondering how the arrangements had been made, since Jardine had been right here in Flat Rock all day. Jardine smiled faintly at that thought. He liked to keep a few of his cards close to the vest, and one of them was the fact that he had a partner in this enterprise, a partner none of the other men knew about. That partner was the one who had ridden out and met with Juan Pablo earlier today, after Two Wolves had formed that unlikely alliance with the Devil's Pitchfork crew. When Jardine had heard about that, he had known that it was time to make their biggest move yet in this game. Being cautious was all well and good, but at some point, decisive action was needed. This was that point.
Go down to the Mexican's place and get the wagon ready. Bring it to the alley behind the saloon and we'll go get the guns.
His men didn't know where the rifles were hidden. Only Jardine and his partner knew that, because they had unloaded the crates after the first attempt to deliver the rifles to the Navajo. The time for secrecy was over now.
All right, boss. Do we get all the other fellas who are in town together?
That's right. We'll all ride out with the wagon.
That was only 7 or 8 men. The other members of the gang were either wounded or out at the mesa with the rustled cattle. But that ought to be enough. Nobody knew what was really going on here, so they couldn't prepare for it. The three men hurried out of the Buckingham Palace. Jardine poured himself another drink and leaned back in his chair to enjoy it. His gaze roamed across the room and lingered on the beautiful Lady Augusta Winslow, who stood at the bar talking to one of the bartenders. Jardine's eyes narrowed. Once he was the king of the Four Corners, that lovely but stuck-up British bitch would be his for the taking. She wouldn't dare turn him down. He had made a few advances already, only to be politely rebuffed. She would learn. He would do the teaching. And it would be a lesson Lady Augusta would never forget. His men showed up with a wagon about 10 minutes later, with Hilliard at the reins. Jardine climbed to the seat and took over the team, forcing Hilliard aside. Jardine was the only one who knew where he was going. He drove along the back alley behind the buildings along Flat Rock's main street. When he came to one of the larger buildings, he brought the vehicle to a stop and got down. The building was made of boards freighted in from Phoenix. The floor sat on piers, so there was a crawl space underneath it. Jardine went up some steps to a small rear porch. A moment later, the door opened and a man stepped out.
It's time. Let's get those rifles out.
Of course. I'll be glad to get them out of here.
Noah Riley came down the steps, took a key from his pocket, and used it to unfasten a padlock on a short door that opened into the crawl space under the general store. He stepped aside so Jardine could reach inside and grab the handle on the end of the nearest crate. It hadn't been easy for the two of them to wrestle those crates into and out of the crawl space, but Riley was stronger than his small stature would indicate. Still, Jardine was glad that after tonight, they wouldn't have to do this anymore. Jardine slid the first crate out.
Load it up, men.
He supposed his men were surprised to find out that he and Riley were working together. That wouldn't be the case much longer, though. Riley had some idea that once they were successful, he would be the power behind the throne, so to speak, because the whole plan had been his idea to start with. Jardine wasn't going to let that happen. Once the Navajo had launched their bloody uprising and the army came in, Riley wouldn't be of any more use. Jardine could get rid of him without jeopardizing anything, and that was exactly what he planned to do. Of course, Riley might have the same thing in mind for him. If that was the case, the little storekeeper was going to be mighty disappointed. But not for long, since he'd be dead soon. When all the guns were loaded, Riley turned to Jardine.
Can you find the rendezvous point in the dark?
Don't worry about that. I know these parts better than you do. We'll be there a couple hours before dawn.
Juan Pablo should be waiting for you. And in another month or so, we'll be well on our way to being rich men.
Can't be too soon to suit me.
That's true for me as well. I've spent my entire life working for other men, but not much longer.
Jardine tried not to grin. He stepped up onto the wagon box.
Let's go, men. We've got rifles to deliver. See you tomorrow, Noah.
Good luck.
Thanks.
But Jardine knew he didn't really need luck. He was going to be the king of the Four Corners. It was his destiny. Matt, Sam, Elizabeth, Stovepipe, and Wilbur sent their horses racing along the creek toward the mouth of the canyon. Matt hoped Elizabeth was a good rider. In the dark like this, it would be easy for a horse to take a spill. Several men carrying rifles were between them and the canyon mouth.
Hunker down!
They all leaned forward over the necks of their mounts. The Navajo who tried to stop them fell behind, as did the fire in front of one Pablo's hogan. Now the Navajo men were firing blindly, and the chances of them hitting anything were very slim. But even wild shots got lucky and found their targets every now and then, Matt knew. So he stayed low and kept his horse moving fast, and hoped that the others would too. He looked over his shoulder. The riders were strung out a little now. He was in the lead, followed by Stovepipe, Wilbur, and Elizabeth. Sam was bringing up the rear, and Matt knew his blood brother was doing that on purpose to protect Elizabeth. They were almost at the mouth of the canyon now. Matt wasn't surprised when shots rang out from the sentries posted there.
How bad is it, Bart?
Just nick me, the varmint. Keep going, Stovepipe. Don't slow down.
Wasn't intending to, but you holler if you need any help, yeah?
Matt knew he was operating purely on the excitement of battle and the urgent need to escape from this canyon. He drew his right hand cold and fired toward the places where he'd seen the flare of the sentry's guns. He wasn't really trying to hit anything. He just wanted to give them something to think about and make them duck. From the back of the group, Matt heard Sam's revolver and knew that he was trying to do the same thing. The effort seemed to work. The running horses flashed past the sentries and through the entrance to the canyon. Now they were out in the open, with the cliffs rapidly falling behind them.
Will they come after us?
Sam pulled his mount up even with Elizabeth's.
I don't know. Juan Pablo left some of his followers behind to guard us and keep an eye on Caballo Rojo and the men who don't want a war. I don't know if they would risk leaving the canyon completely unguarded.
Some of them might come after us, though. They won't want us to interfere with Juan Pablo getting his hands on those guns.
But that's dang sure what we need to do. Think you can find the place where the gang was going to turn him over before?
I believe I can. Matt was unconscious for a lot of that time, so he doesn't know exactly where it is.
I trust you, though.
Matt swayed suddenly in his saddle.
Easy there, Part.
Wilbur was close enough to reach out and grab Matt's arm in a steadying grip.
You're in no shape for this, Matt. We need to find a place where we can leave you and Elizabeth before we go after Juan Pablo and the rifles.
Not hardly.
Matt shook his arm free from Wilbur's hand.
I'm obliged for your help, but I'm fine now. And I'm coming along to help you stop Juan Pablo, Sam. You can get any other ideas out of your head right now.
I see that being wounded hasn't kept you from being as stubborn as ever. Well, I'm stubborn too. And you're not leaving me behind either. You can't afford to take the time to find a safe place for Matt and me. The lives of too many innocent people are at stake.
The lady's right about that. But if you can't keep up, Matt, we may have to leave you behind.
I'll keep up. Come on. We're burning starlight.
First time I've heard that one.
With Sam in the lead now, they pushed on, stopping occasionally to rest the horses when it became obvious that none of the Navajo from the canyon were pursuing them. Without Juan Pablo there to tell them what to do, uncertainty probably reigned. Matt figured it was well after midnight when Sam held up a hand to signal a halt, and the others gathered around him. The stars wheeled through the dark heavens overhead.
That bluff where Matt and I were bushwhacked the first time is maybe half a mile away. We'd better dismount and go the rest of the way on foot. Elizabeth, can you hold the horses?
Of course. But what about Matt?
Matt drew his Colt and replaced the shells he had fired earlier when they were escaping from the canyon.
I'm going. And Sam, don't try to stop me.
Wouldn't think of it, even with you in bad shape. There's nobody I'd rather have sighting my play than you, Matt.
All right, fellas. Let's go see if we can catch us some gun runners.
Jardine hauled back on the lines and brought the wagon to a stop. Around him, his men reined in as well. The dark, looming bulk of the bluff told Jardine that they were in the right place. He had been confident in his ability to find his way out here, even at night, but it was nice to know that he'd been right. Now all they had to do was wait for Juan Pablo to show up. Jardine smiled wryly. The man was a damn fool. Juan Pablo actually believed he could rouse the whole Navajo Nation against the whites and lead his people to victory. He had no idea how doomed to failure they really were. That failure would lead to Jardine's success, though. Once the Navajo were cleaned out of the territory like the vermin they were, the way would be clear for a man with guts and brains to seize power. A man like him. Jardine took a cigar from his shirt pocket and clamped it between his teeth. Snyder brought his horse alongside the wagon.
How will we know when the Indians are here, boss?
They should be here already.
Jardine turned halfway around on the seat and reached behind him into the wagon bed. Finding the lantern that was sitting there, he lifted it and set it on the seat beside him. Then he snapped a lucifer to life with his thumbnail, lit the lantern, and held the flame to the tip of the cigar. He stood up, held the lantern out at the end of his arm, and swung it back and forth three times.
Oh, that's a signal, eh?
Shut up and be ready for trouble. There shouldn't be any, but I don't trust those damned Redskins.
Jardine set the lantern on the wagon seat again and left the lantern burning. He picked up his own rifle and sat with it across his lap. An air of tension gripped him, and he knew it extended to his men as well. The Navajo weren't paying anything for the rifles, although Juan Pablo had promised payment later on, once they had run out all the whites. Jardine fully expected Juan Pablo to try to double-cross him on that angle, although Juan Pablo had no idea that Jardine didn't really care. But the Indians might try to get fancy and kill the men who had delivered the rifles to them. It was unlikely, but it could happen. If it did, the Navajo would learn quickly that half a dozen tough men armed with Winchester repeaters were more than a match for a motley bunch of savages armed with bows, arrows, and a few ancient single-shot rifles. Jardine suddenly sat up straighter. Somebody was coming, and it had to be Juan Pablo. Who else would be out here in this isolated spot at such a wee hour of the morning? Jardine's men gripped their rifles tighter and waited for the newcomers to arrive. Jardine stood up and lifted the lantern again so that its glow spread out on the arid, rocky landscape around the wagon. He knew he was making a target out of himself, almost daring somebody to shoot at him, but at the moment, he didn't care. He felt invulnerable, as if no one would ever dare to challenge him. The lantern light revealed the glaring, hawk-like face of Juan Pablo, who was accompanied by five other Navajo warriors. Juan Pablo edged his pony ahead of the others.
You have the rifles?
Would we be here if we didn't?
Jardine set the lantern on the wagon seat and waved his free hand toward the crates.
Here they are.
Open the boxes. I would look at them.
You don't trust me, amigo?
I would look at them.
All right, fine. Snyder, Hilliard, pry the lid off one of those crates.
He looked at Juan Pablo again.
But only one. We're not going to sit here the rest of the night prying lids off and nailing them back on.
Juan Pablo's scowl didn't lessen any, but he gave a curt nod of agreement. When Snyder and Hilliard had one of the crates open, the Navajo moved his pony nearer the wagon and leaned over so he could look into the bed. The rifles were wrapped in oilcloth.
Show me.
Oh, for God's sake. Dave, get one of the guns out.
Snyder unwrapped one of the Springfields and used a rag to wipe the packing grease off it. Juan Pablo held his hands out. Snyder glanced at Jardine, who nodded. Snyder handed the rifle to Juan Pablo, who snatched it and held it close to study it. The Navajo weighed the weapon in his hands, then opened the loading mechanism in the breech that gave the rifle its trapdoor designation.
Bullets?
10,000 rounds in those boxes.
Jardine pointed to the smaller boxes that contained the ammunition. Juan Pablo shook his head.
Not enough to fight a long war.
But enough to get you started. There's more ammunition in the settlements, and it'll be yours for the taking.
That was true as far as it went. A lot of those rounds wouldn't fit these Springfields, but that wasn't Jardine's lookout. Anyway, all it would take was a couple of bloody raids, and the army would be on its way from Fort Defiance to begin the forced removal, or extermination if it came to that, of the Navajo. Despite what Juan Pablo had just said, This wouldn't be a long war at all. Juan Pablo finally handed the rifle back to Snyder.
All right. We will take the wagon, too.
Of course. That's part of the deal.
When this is over, you and your men will be the only whites allowed on Navajo land.
As we agreed.
Jardine stood up so that he could climb down from the wagon box again and turn the vehicle over to the Indians. His men had brought along an extra saddle horse for him to ride back to Flat Rock. But before Jardine could get down, something shook the wagon, and the impact flung him off and sent him tumbling to the ground. Matt, Sam, Stovepipe, and Wilbur were all experienced at moving quietly through the shadows when they needed to, so they were able to approach the bluff without alerting any of the men gathered at the base of it. Sam had spotted the lantern when it first flared to life. The light gave them something to steer by and confirmed their hope that the delivery of the rifles would take place here where it had been supposed to happen more than a week earlier. They couldn't climb to the top of the bluff using the trail Sam had found when he first explored this place with Juan Pablo, so instead the four men had circled around and found another place where the bluff was shallower and could be climbed. Juan Pablo had known all along what had happened here. Sam recalled how the Navajo had tried to persuade him not to investigate. He was lucky Juan Pablo hadn't just tried to kill him outright. He probably would have if he hadn't known that he would have to return to the canyon and try to make Matt believe some lie about what had happened. At that point, Juan Pablo might have still been worried about crossing Caballo Rojo. Now, the renegade didn't care anymore. The four men slipped along the edge of the bluff until they were about the spot where the white men were delivering the rifles to the Navajo. The big, cruelly handsome man on the wagon box seemed to be the leader of the gang.
All right, fine. Snyder, Hilliard, try to lift off one of those crates.
Stovepipe tapped Sam on the shoulder and put his mouth almost against Sam's ear.
You know, if we was to put our shoulders against the boulder there and roll it off, I reckon it'd fall right on top of that wagon.
The range detective was pointing at a good-sized boulder that perched at the very edge of the bluff. Sam studied the angles and realized that Stovepipe was right. Sam nodded his agreement with the plan. He motioned for Matt to stay back and let him, Stovepipe, and Wilbur shove that boulder off the bluff, but Matt shook his head and moved into position with them, planting his feet and resting his left shoulder against the rock. They waited until the men below were talking again.
All right. We will take the wagon too.
Then, heaved against the boulder. The voices below covered up any tiny scraping sounds the rock made as it shifted. The boulder tipped over and was gone, plummeting through the air. Matt saw several of the white men recover quickly from their surprise and start to raise the rifles they held. Matt's hands dipped to his own twin Colts. Wounded though he might be, Matt Bodine's draw was swift and a thing of beauty. A couple of the outlaws toppled out of their saddles as Matt's slugs ripped into their bodies. The other men had their guns out and were blasting by now, too. Sam snapped a shot at the boss of the gang, who had been knocked clear of the wagon when the boulder came crashing down on it. The man scrambled to the side and avoided Sam's bullet. He had managed to hang on to his rifle. Working the lever with blinding speed, he sprayed lead toward the top of the bluff as he ran toward one of the suddenly riderless mounts. That forced Matt, Sam, Stovepipe, and Wilbur to pull back and cease fire for a moment. And as they did, Juan Pablo kicked his horse forward and raced over to one of the shattered crates that had fallen out of the wagon. He reached into it and began pulling out rifles, which he tossed to his men as they followed him. The men on the bluff continued to trade shots with the outlaws, and because they were occupied with that, they couldn't stop the handful of Navajo from looting the broken crate. Matt saw Juan Pablo grab a box of ammunition and leap back onto his pony. Matt snapped a shot at the warrior, but missed.
Sam! They're getting away with some of those rifles!
I know! And the boss is getting away, too!
Indeed, the leader of the gang had made it to one of the horses and swung up into the saddle. He kicked the animal into a run that carried him out of the circle of light cast by the lantern. With their boss deserting them, the rest of the gun smugglers lost their enthusiasm for the fight. Three of them were down. The others wheeled their horses and galloped off into the night, taking a different direction than the fleeing Navajo. Matt lowered his guns.
Now what do we do? That's Elizabeth! Come on!
Sam caught his arm.
She had our horses with her, and Juan Pablo's probably scattered them by now.
But we've got to go after them.
There are a couple of horses down there.
Sam nodded toward the now riderless mounts.
Stovepipe and I will take them. You and Wilbur stay here and guard those rifles.
Blast it, Sam!
The two of you are wounded. Stovepipe and I aren't. Anyway, somebody's got to guard those rifles. Otherwise, Juan Pablo was liable to circle back around and try to grab some more of them. So he may come to you.
I hope so. I surely do.
I ain't hurt that bad. I told you it was just a scratch stovepipe.
I know that.
The lanky range detective rested a hand on his partner's shoulder.
But like Sam says, somebody's got to look after them guns, and I don't know anybody I trust more than you to do it, Pard.
All right, don't go buttering me up. Just get after those varmints and help that girl.
Plan to.
Stovepipe and Sam made their way down the narrow trail to the base of the bluff, followed by Matt and Wilbur. The first thing Sam did when he reached the wrecked wagon was blow out the stubbornly burning lantern. The light just made them better targets. During that brief moment when he'd gotten a good look at the wagon, he had seen that it would never go anywhere again. Not without a lot of work, anyway. Both axles had snapped under the sudden weight of the boulder. All 12 of the crates containing the rifles had broken open. Some of the weapons, no doubt, were ruined. Most of them were still usable, though. And it would be up to Matt and Wilbur to make sure none of them wound up in the wrong hands, along with that ammunition. Sam and Stovepipe caught the two remaining horses and swung up into the saddles that their bullets had emptied.
Hey, we could unhitch a couple of horses from the wagon team and...
No time. We've got to find Elizabeth.
Although Sam was trying to stay calm, worry gnawed at his guts. As enraged as Juan Pablo was bound to be at having his plans ruined like this, there was no telling what he might do to Elizabeth. He and Stovepipe headed off toward the spot where they had left the red-headed teacher.
Did you get a good look at the hombre who was giving orders, Wilbur?
Pretty good, I reckon. Why?
You've been hanging around the settlement for a while, according to what Sam said. Did you recognize that fella?
I don't know his name, but I recollect seeing him in the Buckingham a few times. You know, the way you see anybody in a saloon, drinking and playing cards.
Then we'll probably be able to find him in Flat Rock later. We've got some settling up to do with that hombre.
We'll be lucky to find him. He's probably taking off for the Tall and Uncut right now. Won't stop until he gets to Denver or Santa Fe or El Paso.
I think you're wrong. He's put a lot of time and effort into this scheme. If he could cause some trouble that he could blame on the Navajo, like maybe burning down the saloon or something, he might try it.
You really think he'd do that?
Somebody who would steal a bunch of army rifles and try to turn them over to a troublemaker like Juan Pablo? I wouldn't put much of anything past him.
The flame of rage burned so brightly inside Zach Jardine that it threatened to consume him. He had been close, so close to achieving his goal. And then, like judgment striking literally from the heavens, that boulder had come crashing down and ruined everything. He hadn't gotten a good look at the men who'd been shooting at him, but he was certain one of them was Sam Two Wolves. That half-breed had been a thorn in his side ever since Two Wolves had shown up in Flat Rock. Joe Hutto and Dave Snyder galloped up alongside Jardine. All the others had fallen to the volley of gunshots from the top of the bluff, including Doyle Hilliard.
Pat! What are we gonna do now?
It's all ruined!
Head for Flat Rock. We're gonna grab that Englishwoman from the Buckingham Palace.
What good will that do?
Plenty when Noah Riley tells everybody that Indians carried her off. Everybody in town knows Riley, and they'll believe him.
The more Jardine thought about it, the more he believed the hastily formed plan stood a chance of working. Nothing stirred up frontiersmen quicker than a threat to a woman. If the men of Flat Rock and the nearby ranches believed that Lady Augusta had been kidnapped by the Navajo, they would mount a rescue effort and go charging recklessly out to the canyon where the Navajo lived. Juan Pablo would meet that attack with all the ferocity he and his followers could muster, even without those army rifles, and blood would be spilled on both sides. That was all it would take. The blood was the key to everything. And that key would unlock the fortune that could still make Zach Jardine a rich man. When Sam and Stovepipe reached the spot where they had left Elizabeth, they found her gone and the horses scattered, just as Sam had expected.
That was pure bad luck. Juan Pablo and the others must have ridden right into her while they were trying to get away.
You reckon they're headed back to the canyon?
I don't know where else they would go.
The time it took to reach the canyon where Caballo Rojo's clan lived was torture to Sam. He hadn't gotten to know Elizabeth all that well before he left to search for the bushwhackers, but from what he had seen of her, she was a fine young woman, and she had taken good care of Matt, which meant a lot too. Sam doubted that Juan Pablo would kill her outright, He had expressed his intention to take her as his second wife after all, but there was no telling what else he might do. The eastern sky was starting to turn a faint shade of gray from the approach of dawn when Sam and Stovepipe came inside of the cliffs where the canyon was located. They reined in to talk about their plan of action.
If we just ride straight in, Juan Pablo's probably left guards with a couple of those Springfields at the mouth of the canyon to shoot anybody who shows up.
That's the only way in there. We don't have any choice.
What we need is a distraction. I'll go charging in to draw their fire, and you come along behind me and pick them off.
That's a good way to get yourself killed.
You got a better way to get in there?
Sam had to admit that he didn't.
Why don't I go first and let you pick them off?
Yeah!
Stovepipe kicked his horse into a run and galloped straight at the mouth of the canyon. Sam drew his revolver and followed. Stovepipe had a good lead on him. Sam might have been able to cut into that gap, but he knew this was their best chance of getting into the canyon. At least one of them might make it through. As if warned by some instinct, Stovepipe abruptly pulled his horse to the right, then back to the left. Muzzle flames spurted from both sides of the canyon mouth. That gave Sam the location of the guards, assuming that there were only two of them. The Springfields were single-shot rifles, and although someone trained in their use could reload very quickly, the Navajo would be far from expert at that. Sam was counting on that to give him a slight advantage. While the guards were fumbling to get fresh shells into their weapons, he reached the mouth of the canyon. He triggered shots toward the place where he had seen a muzzle flash on the right, then twisted in the saddle and sent more rounds toward the guard on the left. He didn't know if any of the bullets had found their targets, but he was in the canyon now. He hoped the range detective had made it through all right, too. Sam reloaded his Colt as he rode. What happened from here on out depended on things that were largely out of Sam's control. How many of the Navajo would support Juan Pablo now that the rifles he had promised them wouldn't be delivered after all? Would Caballo Rojo continue to step aside, or would he try to take control of the clan again? A shape loomed up out of the darkness. Sam snapped the cylinder closed and lifted the gun.
Hold on, it's just me. Were you hit, son?
No, I made it through all right. How about you?
Nary a scratch. I'm pretty good at zigging when folks think I'm gonna zag.
Now that we're in, the guards may come after us, and the shots may have warned Juan Pablo that we're on our way.
We best move fast, then, before the varmint has too much time to get ready for us.
They rode swiftly along the creek. When they came to the first hogan, Sam expected shots to come from it. The dwelling remained dark and silent. That was a good sign. It could mean that Juan Pablo didn't have as much support among the other Navajo as he claimed to. Maybe most of them were going to stay out of this clash. Juan Pablo's hogan was about 3/4 of a mile into the canyon, and Caballo Rojo's was another 1/2 mile beyond that. After they passed 2 more hogans, they slowed as they approached the one belonging to Juan Pablo.
He's going to be waiting for us, or for somebody to come after him anyway.
Sam brought his horse to a halt and swung down from the saddle.
I'm going ahead on foot.
Stovepipe dismounted as well.
Good idea. I'll back your play, Sam, whatever it is.
We'll need to draw him out. I know one way to do that. Walk right up and challenge him.
The old paint a target on your back trick, huh?
That's right. Only this time it'll be on my front. And you're going to come in from behind and get into that hogan, so you can free Elizabeth while I'm dealing with Juan Pablo.
Mighty risky tactics. But I don't have any better idea.
They split up, Sam going to the front of the hogan, and Stovepipe circling to the rear. Sam looked for possible cover as he approached, but didn't see any. The only things he saw were the stake where Matt had been tied and the burned-out ashes of the fire nearby.
Juan Pablo! Come out and face me!
As soon as the words were out of his mouth, Sam leapt to the side. The direction he chose was a gamble. He might be jumping right into the path of a bullet. But from just inside the hogan's door, the slug from a Springfield landed harmlessly to Sam's left. He couldn't return the fire for fear of hitting Elizabeth or Juan Pablo's wife, so he continued sprinting to the side, hoping that would draw Juan Pablo out of the earthen dwelling.
Leave this place, half-breed, and I will allow you to live.
It's over, Juan Pablo! There won't be any uprising against the whites.
This is Diné land. It will always be Diné land.
No one will take it away from you.
Sam crouched, out of a direct line of fire from the hogan's entrance.
Already the white men built towns and run their cattle on it. Soon their railroad will come. The Diné will be forced to leave our homes again.
Don't you see that's exactly what the men who tried to give you those rifles want? They know your people can't win a war against the army. Rising up against the whites will have just the opposite effect to what you really want.
Lies. All lies. You might as well be white.
Let Miss Fleming come out of there. You're alone now, Juan Pablo.
Sam made that guess based on the fact that no one seemed to be helping the renegade anymore.
Let her go and things don't have to get any worse than they already are.
No! The woman is mine!
From inside the Hogan, Sam heard the unmistakable sound of something hard hitting flesh and bone.
Sam! Sam, get in here!
Sam dashed for the doorway. He saw a stovepipe coming around the Hogan in a hurry, too. Holding his Colt ready, Sam stepped into the dwelling's shadowy interior.
I'm over here tied up. Get me loose, Sam, please.
Sam could make out Juan Pablo's crumpled form lying on the ground. The man's wife stood over him, a chunk of firewood in her hand. Stooping, Sam took hold of the Springfield rifle that lay next to Juan Pablo's unconscious form and handed the weapon to Stovepipe, who had followed him into the Hogan. He holstered his Colt and pulled the bowie knife from its sheath, knelt, and cut the bonds around Elizabeth's wrists.
Josefina saved me again. Of course, she did it out of jealousy, not any great affection for me. In fact, I think she'd be pleased if I left the canyon and never came back.
Which is exactly what you're going to do.
You're right. I can't stay here anymore. Maybe someone else can help educate these people. They deserve it.
What happened to the men who were with Juan Pablo?
They had a big argument outside after Juan Pablo forced me in here and tied me up. I couldn't follow all of it, but I'm pretty sure the other men told him they didn't want anything more to do with his uprising. He let them down when they didn't get the rifles. I guess you and the others were responsible for that.
Sam helped her to her feet.
That's right. Matt and Wilbur are standing guard over the rifles now. We need to get back to them and head on to Flat Rock as soon as possible to make sure the gang behind all this doesn't try anything else.
What are you going to do about Juan Pablo?
I'm going to leave him for Caballo Rojo to deal with, and his wife. I've got a hunch she's not going to put up with much more foolishness from him.
It's true that the women wield a great deal of power in Navajo society, and Caballo Rojo is still the headman of this clan. I think he can keep Juan Pablo in line now that all the other men have abandoned his cause. I don't think he's truly a bad man. He just has a hard time getting used to life the way it really is.
Reckon everybody's that way, sometimes.
Elizabeth went to hug Juan Pablo's wife, but the woman turned away, her face as stoic as ever.
Well, thank you anyway. Thank you for everything. Gracias.
The woman relented in her stiffness enough to give her a curt nod. Sam, Stovepipe, and Elizabeth stepped outside. Sam stiffened as he saw Caballo Rojo standing there with a grim look on his face. The headman leveled an arm toward the canyon mouth.
Go.
That's where we're headed. You won't see us again after this, Caballo Rojo.
The Navajo looked like that would be just fine with him. The more Matt thought about it, the more he knew that he had to get to Flat Rock. He couldn't afford to wait for Sam and Stovepipe to return. The ringleader of that gang was going to try something else.
Wilbur, I'm going to take one of those horses from the wagon team and head for town. You can stay here and keep an eye on those rifles.
You're loco. Stovepipe and Two Wolves told us to stay here.
Once it gets light, you can fort up in these rocks and keep anybody who comes along away from the guns. My gut tells me the vermin behind all this isn't finished yet.
Yeah, well, my gut tells me the same thing, and you're hurt worse than I am. If anybody goes, it ought to be me.
No offense, Wilbur, but you're not exactly a gunfighter.
You ever notice when somebody says no offense, they're about to say something damned offensive?
Matt was already unhitching one of the horses. He cut lengths of rein off the wagon's lines and attached them to the bit in the horse's mouth.
Besides, you never even been to Flat Rock. You don't even know how to get there.
Tell me the general direction. I can find it.
Why should I?
Matt looked at his companion intently.
Because I'm the only one who stands a chance right now stopping that bunch from raising more hell.
Oh, all right.
He told Matt how to find the settlement.
But you're going to be outnumbered at least 3-1. Don't come complaining to me when you get yourself killed.
Wouldn't think of it.
Matt climbed onto the horse and set off bareback toward Flat Rock, steering by the stars that were still bright in the night sky. He couldn't hope to reach the settlement before the members of the gang, since they had a good lead on him. But he pushed the horse as hard as he could, so that maybe they wouldn't have time to get up to too much mischief before he got there. After an hour or so, the eastern sky began to lighten with the dawn. Matt spotted a few scattered lights up ahead. It was too early for very many people to be up and about in Flat Rock, but clearly some of the citizens were awake. Matt pushed his horse harder, anxious to get there. He was still at least half a mile from the settlement when he spotted the three riders. At first, they were just shadows in the graying light, but then he was able to make them out better. He recognized the big brawny shape of the man in the lead, who was carrying something draped over the saddle in front of him. Sensing that this was trouble in the offing, Matt veered his horse to intercept them.
Hey, we're being followed!
The men split up, the leader angling to the north, the other two charging straight at Matt with their guns spitting flame. The big draft horse he was riding was slow and ungainly, but the animal had sand. Matt had to give it that. The horse didn't spook from the racket of gunshots and the smell of powder smoke, even when Matt filled his hands with both of his irons. One of the outlaws slewed around in the saddle before toppling off his mount. The other rocked back as one of Matt's slugs drove into his chest, but stayed upright and kept firing. Matt triggered again as they swept past each other, and this time the man's head jerked from the impact. He had to be dead when he hit the ground. Matt wheeled his horse about and looked after the leader. He didn't know if his horse could catch up to the man. But then the outlaw's horse broke stride, and as the dawn light spread over the landscape even more, Matt realized that there were two people on the horse, not one. Matt started after them, urging the horse underneath him to surrender every bit of speed and strength it possessed. The animal responded gallantly. As Matt closed the gap between him and his quarry, the second figure on the horse suddenly broke free and either fell or jumped off. The leader of the gunrunners hauled his mount around, but instead of going after the person who had escaped from him, he drew his gun and aimed at Matt. As Matt leaned forward over his horse's neck, he barely took note of the fact that the person on the ground was a woman. Her long auburn hair was in disarray. Matt's horse stumbled. He didn't know how badly the animal was wounded. The horse didn't go down. It charged ahead, and now Matt straightened from his crouch with both Colts leveled. The ringleader of the gang flew out of the saddle. He hit the ground hard, rolled over a couple of times, and lay still. Using the makeshift reins, Matt pulled his horse to a stop and slid down from its back. He saw the crease on his horse's shoulder and was glad that the animal wasn't hurt any worse than that. Matt's right-hand Colt was empty, but the left-hand gun still had one round in it. Out of long habit, Matt had kept track of the shots he'd fired. He pouched the right-hand iron, but kept the other one ready as he approached the fallen ringleader. The man wasn't a threat anymore. He had dropped his gun, and the front of his shirt was sodden with blood from several bullet wounds. He managed to look up at Matt.
Who?
I'm Matt Bodine. Who are you?
King of the Four Corners.
Not hardly.
Matt turned back toward the woman. She ran to meet him, but before she could get there, his strength abruptly deserted him. He fell to his knees.
Oh, my God! Are you hurt?
Matt looked up at her. Even in her disheveled state, she was beautiful.
You've got a British accent.
That's because I'm from England. Let me help you, sir.
I like the way you folks talk.
That's all well and good, but you seem to be injured.
The dawn light went away, and darkness closed in around him. When Sam Stovepipe and Elizabeth reached the wagon and found Wilbur there alone, Sam left the others behind and raced on into Flat Rock, arriving there at mid-morning. Practically the first thing he saw was Matt sitting on a bench in front of the Buckingham Palace Saloon with Lady Augusta Winslow. Matt grinned as Sam pulled up at the hitch rack and almost leapt from his saddle.
Figured you'd be along directly. Take it easy, I'm all right.
Yes, other than your obvious addle-patedness for going off after that bunch by yourself. Lady Augusta, good morning.
Yes, it is, thanks to your friend Matt. He rescued me, you know. Zach Jardine and two of his henchmen had kidnapped me.
Zach Jardine?
Big fella who was the leader of the bunch trying to start a new war with the Navajo. I didn't know his name either, until after I shot him.
He's dead?
Yep. And so are the other two who got away when we busted up their attempt to deliver those rifles to the Indians. You got Elizabeth away from Juan Pablo, all right, didn't you?
She's fine. And Juan Pablo won't give any more trouble. His wife will see to that, along with Caballo Rojo.
Can't help but think maybe it would have been better to shoot him. I don't cotton to somebody telling me I'm going to be shot at dawn. But I guess if they can keep him settled down, that'll be all right.
Now the only one we have to worry about is poor Noah Riley.
The little fellow who runs the general store?
That's right. He was found unconscious in front of the store early this morning. I think he must have seen Jardine and his men come into town and gotten suspicious of them. He may have confronted them before they came up the back stairs of the saloon and abducted me. Mr. Riley appears to have been struck with a pistol.
Poor little fella. Where is he?
I had him taken up to my room and put to bed there, in hopes that he'll regain consciousness and recover.
Well, when he does wake up, he'll be in a good place.
Hush, Mr. Bodine. You're in no shape to be flirting with anyone. You only regained consciousness yourself a short time ago.
I was just a mite tired, that's all. You said yourself those bullet holes in my side look like they're still healing up just fine, ma'am.
Yes, but you're going to need a great deal of rest before you're back to normal.
Matt might have had something to say about that, but before he could, one of the bartenders stepped through the bat wings.
Ma'am, that girl you had keeping an eye on Riley just came down and said he's awake. He's all agitated, though, so I reckon you ought to go up there.
Oh, of course.
I'll come with you. Noah was one of the first folks I met here in Flat Rock.
I'll come, too. I want to hear what he's got to say about what happened.
They found Noah Riley sitting up in bed, looking impatient, while one of the saloon girls wiped his forehead with a wet cloth. Riley's eyes widened for a second when he saw Sam.
What are you doing here? Why, and who's this man?
Don't worry about that, Noah. Are you all right? You got clouded pretty hard on the head, it looks like.
Riley closed his eyes for a second.
I'm fine. I can't believe those savages didn't scalp me, or at least cut my throat.
Savages?
Yes, the Indians I caught skulking around early this morning when I got to the store to open up. It looked like they were going to try to sneak into the saloon. Lady Augusta, are you all right? Well, I knew your life would be in danger when I saw those Navajo.
Matt and Sam exchanged a quick look.
You're sure it was some Navajo you saw, Noah?
What? Well, of course I'm sure. I've seen plenty of them around town in the past. I know a Navajo when I see one.
And you got a good look at them?
I was as close as I am to any of you. I had to be for them to hit me and knock me out the way they did. Dear lady, did they harm you? How in the world did you escape from those red savages?
I don't understand, Mr. Riley. It wasn't the Navajo who carried me off. It was Zach Jardine and two of his men.
Riley stiffened in alarm. Matt saw him start to reach for something under his coat. Matt drew his Colt.
Whatever you're reaching for, you'd better leave it right where it is, mister. And while you're at it, you can start explaining why the story you're trying to tell us doesn't match up with any of the facts.
Why, I...
Sam shook his head. He'd liked the little storekeeper.
You should have kept your mouth shut and claimed you didn't know what happened, Noah. You probably would have gotten away with it then. Now, though, it's pretty obvious that you cooked up this whole deal with Jardine. Were the two of you partners?
The partners, hell! The entire thing was my idea. And if we'd have pulled it off, I would have been the ruler of the whole Four Corners.
This is America, mister. We don't have kings. No offense, your ladyship.
None taken, I assure you. Why do you think I came to America in the first place? I didn't want a bloody king either.
By that evening, another wagon had gone out to pick up the crates of guns and returned with them. They were locked up at the moment in the back room of the now-closed general store. Matt, Sam, Stovepipe, and Wilbur sat on the bench in front of the saloon and watched the day's light fade, taking with it some of the scorching heat. The four of them had been over the whole thing, hashing out what they knew and what they could guess, and they were convinced that they had a pretty accurate picture. Noah Riley hadn't offered any sort of detailed confession after the things he had said that morning, but he was locked up too. A rider had carried word to Fort Defiance, and Matt and Sam expected an officer and a cavalry detail to show up in a day or two and take charge of everything. including the lone surviving member of the gang.
Here's what I can't believe about the whole thing. You weren't in on the end of it, Stovepipe. I'm used to you being the one who rounds up the head varmint.
Oh, I reckon I did my share.
Stovepipe looked at Matt and Sam.
Couldn't interest you boys in a job, could I? You seem to be good at getting to the bottom of things. The Cattlemen's Protective Association could use you.
Not a chance. Sam and I don't cotton to working for wages.
You're just gonna keep on drifting like a pair of fiddle-footed cowboys?
That's the plan.
But not just yet. I'm gonna go call on Miss Elizabeth Fleming and take her to supper at that cafe you fellas told me about.
And I'm gonna go talk to Lady Augusta.
Wilbur, you'll get so tongue-tied and start sputtering so much, she's liable to think you got the hydrophobia.
Dang it! There you go again. Always trying to interfere in my love life.
I'm just trying to keep you from getting your feelings hurt. Anyway, you can't go making calf eyes at that gal. Soon as the army gets here and takes charge of them guns, you and I got more work to take care of.
More work? Where?
I don't know. We'll have to find us a telegraph office and check in with the boss. But you know how it is, Wilbur. Hell's always popping somewhere.
Sam knew that was true. Especially wherever the Blood Brothers went. But that's the way it was with Brothers of the Wolf and Brothers of the Gun. Blood Bond, Arizona Ambush is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2011, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, Karen Novak, Christopher Graybill, Bradley Smith, James Keegan, Alexander Strain, Richard Rowan, Larissa Gallagher, Daniel Sontag, Gregory Gorton, Danny Gavigan, Stephen Carpenter, Scott McCormick, Joseph Thornhill, M.B. Van Dorn, Patrick Bussink, Joe Brack, Michael John Casey, Kimberly Gilbert, and Nanette Savard. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Richard Rowan. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Temeskin Wubna. Additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Blood Bond, be sure to look for our many other William W. Johnstone titles, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio titles.
Available now in graphic audio.
I'm not in the mood for jokes, Creed. I'm just lucky you missed the booby traps.
Booby traps? Now you're scaring me. What, a tripwire? Explosives?
Explosives. Been there, done that. Got the t-shirt.
I was invited here.
By whom?
I'm gathering research for a television program. But I'm not the BBC, so chill.
Research on fairies, right? Go scamper about the woods, why don't you? And leave us to our work here.
And what exactly is that work? You've got something to hide. Is it two bodies?
Man holding a gun here. Why is it you're not afraid?
Afraid? A charging mountain lion would invoke my fear. Terrorists wielding C-14 makes me afraid. A thug with a gun? Been there, done that, shredded the t-shirt.
Who the bloody hell are you? You're Starkers, you are!
You don't even know who you're following? I get to ask the questions. Who sent you?
I don't rightly know. I didn't get a name.
Liar.
I'm a feckin' freelancer. Watch the blade, will you, love? I think you killed me partner.
He's not dead. He passed out from the pain.
pain, I promise you if you don't start talking. Now, you'll have me believe you don't know the name of the guy signing your paycheck?
It's all cash now, isn't it?
What was the order?
To follow the American woman and make sure she gets out of town. Oh! Get out of town, love.
You first.
I'm hot on their trail. There's something out there. I know I found them, but who or what are they? It's very close. Whatever it is. I feel like the temperature has dropped a few degrees. That's what happens when ghosts are around, right? Hell, I don't want to see a ghost. There are no ghosts. Chill, Kritz. It was a stupid bird. The owl. Oh.
No! Help! 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 Help!
God, I love a woman who can fight. Really turns me on.
Where is Eric?
You don't get to talk.
Miss Creed can keep her mouth shut.
Shut up! We're going for a ride, the three of us. I'm tired of you shadowing me, Slater. I should have done this days ago.
Don't hurt Eric. He's an innocent.
Like you are innocent of snooping and putting yourself in my way? You know too much about our operation, as does your friend.
He's just a kid. If you don't go to jail for arms dealing, then kidnapping and murder tends to alter a man's choice of Armani to Prison Orange.
I'll take that into consideration. See you around, Miss Creed. Mr. Slater?
Don't panic.
Hold your breath.
Rogue Angel 30, The Other Crowd.
Available now in graphic audio.
Smoke Jensen is one of the most successful ranchers in Colorado, until the winter from hell threatens everything he loves.
Smoke? Are you all right?
I'm fine.
You're worried, aren't you?
I won't lie to you, Sally. We may lose everything.
With everything hanging in the balance, Smoke will be pushed further than he ever has before. But the question is, just how far will he go?
You're gonna hang, mister. I don't know which one of you killed Mr. Clark back there in Etna when you held up the bank, but it don't really matter none who pulled the trigger. Every one of you sons of bitches is just as guilty.
Find out just what kind of man Smoke Jensen really is in The Mountain Man number 34, Betrayal of the Mountain Man. Available now in graphic audio.
Thinking about Smoke, ain't you?
Yeah.
Smoke will be all right. He can take care of himself. You know that.
Yeah, I know it.
You'll find out who done this and get that set right, too.
Unless he...
Unless what?
Parley, have you stopped to think that maybe Smoke, that... Maybe he...
Did it?
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.